We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio. I'm Patricia Karpus. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who share how meditation and mindfulness practices change our lives. Our podcast is brought to you by Meditation Studio, Apple's pick as one of the 10 best apps of the year. Why download the app? Because life is messy. We get stressed, anxious, have trouble sleeping. We work too hard. We feel overwhelmed. We grieve. Our hearts get broken. We worry about the state of the world. We meditate because we're only human. Our app gives you more than 200 meditations from over 30 leading teachers. It helps a lot. And your one-time purchase of the app helps to keep our podcast going. Give it a try. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. We love having you with us. Today, we discuss mindful eating with Andrea Lieberstein, a nutritionist, mindfulness teacher, and author of the new book, Well Nourished, Mindful Practices to Heal Your Relationship with Food, Feed Your Whole Self, and End Overeating. She discusses how important it is to nourish ourselves on all levels so we don't use food as a substitute or quick fix for immediate comfort. Do you eat when you're anxious, stressed, emotionally triggered? Most of us do. When we think we're hungry, we may not be, she says. We may be hungry for the things that are missing in other parts of our lives. Her book focuses on feeding or nourishing these missing pieces, whether they be emotional, intellectual, physical, psychological, social, or even creative. Now, here's Andrea. Andrea, thank you so much for being on Untangle today.
Oh, you're most welcome. I'm excited to be here today.
Let me ask you about how you define mindful eating.
Yeah, so mindful eating is a way of paying attention while you're eating in a way that you're engaging all your senses so that you're really getting the full nourishment from the food on a full, you know, sensorial level. We overall end up feeling more nourished and satisfied by eating in a mindful way. So we're paying attention to our senses, you know, our sense of smell, taste, sight as we're eating. And we're also paying attention to our inner cues of our body, our hunger cues, our fullness cues. It's that inner awareness of what's happening in the body and then really paying attention to the food. It also includes not only the experience of eating, but and honoring our body and what it really needs, but also mindfulness of what we're putting in our foods and mindfulness of our choices and mindfulness of our triggers.
Why do so many people have challenges with eating? Are we on autopilot? Where do we begin with this fast eating or not understanding how food connects with our bodies in a nourishment way?
It's such a great question, Patricia, and I want to invite everyone listening just to think about your relationship to food and eating and meal planning. And are you present for your meals? Do you take the time to prepare them and really enjoy them? Or is it almost an afterthought? Is it, okay, I've got to eat now to get back to work or to go to this next, get this next whole list of errands done or these meetings? Are you taking the time to really nourish yourself and pay attention?
I like that you use the word nourish, and your book is called Well Nourished, Mindful Practices to Heal Your Relationship with Food, Feed Your Whole Self, and End Overeating, which is such a great promise. What does it mean to like nourish our whole selves?
This book looks deeper at all the kinds of nourishment that make us feel whole and fulfilled in our lives and really meeting our highest potential. There's many dimensions of ourselves that actually, as we get older, we can neglect. We have, for example, our creative side. Creativity is so important, and everybody will have their own way of expressing creativity in their lives. That can be connected to a very deep sense of fulfillment, of enlivenment. People feel that it's coming from a very deep place inside of themselves, expressing their deepest self at times. There's a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction from really nourishing that part of ourselves. That's one aspect. There's so many. We have our spiritual selves, our spiritual side, which is, gosh, just in terms of eating, a lot of these, and in my book, I refer to them as the eight bodies, these different parts of ourselves. If we're not nourishing them in our lives, they can sometimes masquerade as desire and hunger for food.
Well, what's interesting is we talk a lot on this podcast about autopilot, because that seems to be one of the challenges that we all face. I like that you talk about these different ways of nourishing different parts of ourselves. Your chapters are about physical, emotional, psychological, social, intellectual, creative, spiritual. You also have one called worldly nourishment. What I get from that is that if we're taking care of ourselves and we're compassionate with ourselves and also nourishing ourselves in that way, we won't be relying on food as a quick fix to feel better. Does that trivialize it, or is that a connection that you make when you talk about the whole self?
Very much so, right? Because food has become for many a substitute, a quick fix, quick substitute for feeling better or giving immediate comfort, where it's really other aspects of one's life that they're truly needing or wanting to be fulfilled. Yes, it's an easy go-to for many. People's lives tend to be very busy, on automatic, like you say, a lot of automatic pilot. There's food. Another piece in answer to your earlier question is all the environmental triggers around us too, of the easy, the high sugar, high fat, high salt foods that are right there at the cash register or easy to get, nourishing ourselves sometimes with that quick fix rather than stepping back and looking at my book. There's a lot of reflection in it and opportunities for the reader to assess and ask some soul-searching questions and looking at their lives in these different areas and these different realms. How much are they being nourished emotionally, psychologically? Absolutely. As we practice mindful tools and skills in our lives, when we see the areas that were lower in nourishment than others, we can begin to make a plan and have a regular way to nourish our life.
Do you think about meditating as a way to manage your emotional and stress-related issues when you're working with clients? And we talked about mindfulness. What about the actual act of meditating?
The formal practice of meditation is very important in my work with clients. A lot of people come in to these programs thinking that, oh, I can't meditate. I learned it once. I can't make my mind quiet. Thoughts, our wandering mind is normal. That's what our minds do when we're not focused on something. We have this default where our minds begin to wander. They often wander to the lowest hanging fruit, whatever is not working. It's called the negativity bias. Psychologists have labeled that, and it's become a popular term that we tend to focus on, just wander, this wandering mind to, oh, what I have to fix, what I didn't do, what I need to solve. Or if there's a lot of attention and focus and issues with food, it might be worrying about what you last ate, planning for the next meal, worrying about how much weight I may have gained over the last few days. You know, these kinds of thoughts can be very preoccupying for people that are really overly focused on food. Meditation helps us focus the mind. We always start with the breath and the body. It's the first foundation of mindfulness. It's a way to become present. And then we start to see and get familiar with this crazy monkey mind that we have. And we start to see these thoughts and beliefs that are impacting our daily life, our daily experience, how we feel, how we react to things, however subtly. This awareness that we begin to see that what's happening in the mind, that we are not our thoughts, we're more than our thoughts. We start to develop a greater sense of awareness, a deeper sense of self. Awareness, we tap into a greater spacious sense of self that is beyond these passing thoughts and feelings. That inner experience is gold. That's why meditation, this formal practice, is so important to help establish that. From there, in our daily life, when we are having a lot of stress, and that say that eating is a go-to stress reliever, we can pause more easily, pay attention to our breath, maybe take a few deep breaths, see what's really happening, begin to unwind all this feeling of stress and pressure that's present and discomfort that many people have, the trigger to then want to go eat to relieve the discomfort. This helps us come present, some relaxation, and see what's really there, unwind it. See the thoughts, beliefs, the distress that may be fueling this. And just in that moment, even if we don't do anything, that moment can offer some real freedom and break from that automatic behavior.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
Great to hear that, because we know that so many people do emotional and stress-related eating. A lot of that is related to trying to manage these difficult emotions that we have in life. What you're saying, it seems, is that a meditation practice, learning how to be more mindful off the cushion as well, can be really helpful in putting a pause between the way that you act when you get those impulses to quickly eat when you're feeling
sad or frustrated or angry. A lot of people have some sort of go-to stress reliever. Some people use exercise. Some people drink. Some people eat. I think what you're saying is that mindfulness is that sort of intercepting tool that we have to help us kind of rejigger that habit.
Absolutely. And in that space, we can ask ourselves, what do I truly need in this moment? That's a key question. What do I need? What would truly nourish me in this moment? There's an automatic kind of softening that happens with that question. So no, we don't absolutely need to meditate to stop and pause, but it really helps. And we know through a lot of research now in the brain that our brains actually change in a very positive way with practice. It's easier to have more awareness to break that impulsive knee-jerk reaction, that first reaction. We can bring insight to the moment. And meditators have more positive affect. We develop more resource, a lot more inner resources. One of the things that, you know, you mentioned, it could be people's go-to stress reliever. Might be exercise, might be meditation.
Right.
Might be working more, watching endless TV, whatever it is, drinking. But what is happening, part of that is there's discomfort. Feeling stress or difficult emotions is uncomfortable. This is what a lot of people have developed in response to not feeling those emotions, wanting to feel better, seeking comfort.
That's a great point. Yes.
Yeah. So what's really wonderful about mindfulness is that with this moment of awareness, bringing attention to the breath, maybe taking a few deep breaths to help give a little head start to that relaxation process and the mind maybe getting a little bit quieter. We can start to unwind and see what we may really need in the moment. But we also have many kind of ways of being with what's arising that we actually cultivate in the practice of formal meditation. It's about being able to open to the moment, to see clearly what is there without reacting and without resisting and pushing away. If we think for a moment of our minds as this vast ocean, or our awareness as this vast ocean, and if we're struggling against what's happening, if we're judging our thoughts, if we're even judging wanting to eat that delicious warm-baked chocolate cookie that someone just brought to work because you think you can't have a cookie because it's a bad food or not on your diet. And by the way, in mindful eating, we don't have good foods and bad foods. We learn how to really enjoy and savor food. What happens naturally, we begin to choose more quality foods because we're tuned in to how they make us feel and how we respond. It happens naturally from that inside out. It's not an imposed set of diet rules from the outside. It's not a diet. But this awareness leads us down a path of more health and well-being. We begin to notice all these old judging thoughts and beliefs that we may have gotten as children from our society, from all the diets we've tried. We start to bring awareness and we learn to just notice what's present in the moment without judging. If we're having a strong emotion, feeling bad, back to that chocolate chip cookie, oh, I shouldn't be having that. And
forgive yourself.
Forgive, right. Maybe there's some guilt arising for something you ate the night before. Just noticing what's present and bringing a sense of kindness and compassion. With mindfulness practice, we can work a lot on really cultivating this ability, but it's not always that easy.
It's not so easy.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
It's not. There's whole training in ways of bringing kindness and compassion to oneself, to the moment. That's the opposite, really, of judgment. It's the opposite of, in a way, of aversion, because aversion is, I don't want this. This isn't okay. Pushing it away, not accepting what is, which, by the way, when we start to really bring awareness to the moment, a lot of the time there's a subtle feeling of we should be feeling something different, doing something different. Something should be different. We're not just being okay with this moment. If we think of the mind, think of this vast ocean and all the thoughts and feelings that we become aware of, if we struggle against them, pushing them away, we're creating more waves. We're creating more waves. We can think of thoughts and feelings as kind of the waves on the surface of this ocean, and we're adding more to that if we judge, if we struggle against. As we rest more in mindful awareness, we identify more with this deep, vast ocean, the clear depths, and we see the waves for what they are. We don't add to them, or we add much less, right? We catch ourselves. Right. So then we don't create more waves.
Exactly. When you talk about the no diet focus, I think dieting creates so much anxiety in people, even new waves of weighing yourself every day and having your emotions or your moods be dictated by whether you're 1 pound or 2 pounds up or down. And think about all of the anxiety that that creates, taking this approach, which is more thoughtful and more true to your whole self, seems like it would be a lot more effective. Do you see big changes in your clients from the time that they begin your practice as a nutritionist and a mindfulness teacher? I mean, there's a lot to learn in both of those areas. Do you see big changes after a workshop or a session?
Absolutely. In a workshop, I typically work with my clients 3 months because that's a really good amount of time to really establish this practice of mindfulness and to start to unwind all these old habits and embrace this new way of being, this kind, self-compassionate, nourishing way. And that's really the key. People learn to be so much more kind and compassionate and not judging of oneself. That is so freeing. We work on shifting the focus. Yes, absolutely. Away from the scale, away from worrying about the weight, but more about nourishment. The well-nourished work goes even beyond just the mindful eating work, but what is really important to you? I have a chapter on getting in touch with your purpose, a sense of purpose, and making a contribution is so nourishing for us, right? When we get in touch with that and whatever our unique contribution is, whether it's in the scale of family, community, friends, or on a larger scale, rather than the focus being on, okay, losing a few pounds, eating this way, then I'll be happy. Then I'll be fulfilled. Then everyone will like me. Shifting the focus to deeper things and the deeper nourishment. And as people become more kind and self-compassionate with themselves, they're more kind and compassionate with others. It just spreads into, because it's contagious, how they are with others.
I love that. You have I think it's a quote in your introduction. For true change to occur, we need to understand how tending to each part touches, uplifts, and strengthens all the other parts. And I think that that's so beautiful because your whole concept is really holistic, and it's not just about the food that we eat and getting healthy in that way, but it's about getting healthy holistically and living the life we want to live in alignment with our true values and passion. Tell me a little bit about how self-compassion and kindness play into your book and your work.
That's a great question, Patricia. Thanks for asking that. As I was preparing for this interview today, I was thinking, what is the most important message that I want to impart? What are the most important component of this work? Self-compassion and kindness are really core to this work. We, as a culture, are so in need of that. As a culture and individually, there is so much comparison out there, you know, through the media and social media, comparison, societal values, standards, images, advertising, consumerism that is aimed at making us feel like we're not enough and we need something else, or we need a different body, or to eat in a different way to be enough, to feel good, to be liked, to whatever it is. learning, bringing awareness to that, first of all. We don't have to be so much at the whims of it. Then we can learn tools to bring kindness and self-compassion to ourselves when we're judging ourselves, when we're noticing comparing mind, when we're having challenging or difficult feelings. All of these things, if we don't have tools just to be able to be in our own skins and be with ourselves, we might stay on automatic pilot. We don't want to feel discomfort. We might go, as we talked about, to numb with food or with other things that aren't so helpful to us. But with self-compassion and kindness, we can nourish ourselves from the inside out in that moment. Then we can make the nourishing choice. That's one of the things that I really want to underscore. Loving kindness is another practice where we really develop this quality of kindness and love towards ourselves and towards others. It's what we need so much as a society and individually. This helps us. Research shows us that as we become more compassionate to ourselves, we make better self-care choices. It's really related.
I'm so happy that you brought that up, because we hadn't talked about the messages that we get from media and even from our parents. There's so much pressure for young girls and adults, and maybe even young boys now too, to look a certain way, and that whole sort of compare and despair feeling that people often get. I really love that you're integrating this loving kindness, compassion, self-compassion, and even forgiveness into these practices, because I feel like that's so important and so needed.
Yes. And then the other piece is really valuing oneself and getting in touch with your own unique gifts and purpose and contribution. And it doesn't matter. Again, no comparing mind. It doesn't have to look like anybody else's. It what feels most meaningful to you in the ways that you contribute in the world. Really cherishing your own unique gifts is really important. And goodness knows we need all of us to contribute in the ways that feel most meaningful to us, where our gifts and talents lie and are energizing and coming from a well-nourished place. Then we can contribute our gifts and not feel depleted, but actually let it be almost like, if you think of the symbol of the infinity symbol of a figure eight, of a giving and receiving that is seamless and replenishing. So that's another piece of this. We're all connected. And the work that we do on ourselves in this way, we can take that out and make a difference in a beautiful, resourced way. We're nourished from the inside out, and we're nourishing as well those that we come in contact with.
Thank you so much, Andrea. What a beautiful contribution that you're making with this book and with the work that you do every day. I'm so grateful, and I'm so happy that you were able to be on our show today.
Patricia, again, thank you so much for having me. Yes, and the work that you're doing in this world.
Thank you. Thanks so much to Andrea for her great insights. You can find her book, Well Nourished, at all major booksellers. And for more information on her trainings, go to mindfuleatingtraining.com. If you have feedback or suggestions for guests, as always, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio in the App Store or on Google Play. We'll see you next time.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.